Now we'll go back to par side two of broadcast 653. And I just want to say that getting this article from the Houston Post on Raymond Pecunier, I couldn't believe it. He's the guy that says lock him up and lock him up forever. He was behind the plans of Ronald Reagan, as I say, to put the electrodes, the brain experiments, the Vacaville mind control. He was the head of the prisons when Donald DeFries was molded and meeting with his fellows and the SLA people that came out from Indiana, the Narc Squad, Emily and William Harris and their friends Angela and Gary Atwood, and formed in the prison with a L.A. policeman, an informer for them, Donald DeFries, and set up the SLA so they'd have an excuse of terrorism in America. And then they could infiltrate the Venceremos, the farm workers, the United Prisoners Union, and the truly left, the anti-war movement and so forth, and the lesbians, the gays, and all the disparate individual groups, the police could break up and infiltrate and try to bring into the kidnapping of Patty Hearst, the heiress, who's now married to a cop from San Francisco and doing quite well. Okay, but Pecunier was behind all of that, and he wants people, like he says now, prisons are for punishment, not rehabilitation, and he's in Texas. I'm not going into the subject tonight. Next week, I'll talk about the University of Texas and Bobby Inman and the massive computers that we've talked about before. The Houston Post this week had a full-page article on Mr. Hans Mark, who came here from Germany, who's to be the new president of the University of Texas, the first out-of-state person, where all these millions are being donated using the computers of Bobby Inman from the National Security Agency and the CIA and Task Force 157. Mr. Mark is from NASA, and I'll read you a hair-raising story or outline it for you. But Raymond Pecunier, if people remember this era in California when Reagan was governor, how righteous that the power of Pecunier is in Texas, because that is where the computer banks are, the IRS banks for data on people in Houston, the power of a lot of the intelligence community and John Connolly down there building his empire by the millions with land investments. Houston, Dallas, and Austin, Texas are places to watch. And the fact that the state of Texas got Pecunier as the head of the prisons, and I see those huge airports, the Dallas-Fort Worth airport, that massive airport for mass migration of population in the future, I rarely predict, but I stand by what I said about Texas. And when this man moves to Texas and Inman moves to Texas and the millions are going down there, it is pretty bad. Now, there was an article it was about a year ago on dangerous files, keeping records on people in the FBI. Dangerous files on dangerous people. And one person, Richard Burris, is saying the Secret Service needs help. And the other articles by Don Edwards saying, here comes 1984 again. Don Edwards, the congressman, was in the FBI, and he's on the House Judiciary Subcommittee on Civil and Constitutional Rights. He chairs it. And he claims that it is very dangerous what is happening to this country. The defender of keeping records on people, this Richard Burris, is from Stanford Hoover Institute. He was a former FBI agent and worked with the House Committee, and he was assistant to President Gerald Ford and Richard Nixon, Crook Nixon and Ford, appointed by Crook Nixon, who was on the Warren Commission, now at Stanford, the Hoover Institute, saying, yes, we need the names of all these various people, and Mr. Edwards saying, no, we don't. It is a horrendous sight, the power these people have gotten, and I just wanted to cite a few articles that came out just this last week on the intention for war, the intention for the teams against terrorism, the building up of terrorism at the International London Congress, and avoiding the real issues. Now, Reagan just came back from London, and I just want to give you a few items about his trip to China before we get on to London, to give you a little dose of what he is. The newspaper proclaims him, Joseph Kraft, this week. The president is now in the position to claim peacemaker title. He's not proving his sincerity or his effectiveness, but he says the Democrats are divided, and a few gestures that Ronald Reagan makes will be sufficient to show that he's a peacemaker. The London Times has a large article. Remember, I was talking about these little teeny tiny articles that had important news. Well, I never saw one week that had full page or two, 3 pages of items or stories. London Times, April 20th, 1984, has a story about Mr. Wirthlin, W-I-R-T-H-L-I-N, Wirthlin, the fellow who runs the campaign for Ronald Reagan, who went to China with him and has a computer and sizes all of us up. Wirthlin's name came up because he had hired Mrs. Meese along with Mr. Moss from Texas and Robert Keith Gray to bail them out of their financial problems. He has the public relations office in Washington that computerizes everything we should think or feel about Ronald Reagan as running for president. It's called Decision-Making Information. He gets $1 million a year. He represents Campbell Soup, Pepsi-Cola, and Purina Pet Food. That's Ronald Reagan's campaign manager. He programs them. And as the London Times said, Ronald Reagan has started running for re-election. He uses his trips to foreign capitals to boost his image as an international statesman. Minding the campaign shop back home is the most sophisticated computerized opinion testing system in the world. This is the London Times telling how he predicts what you think, how he arranges where Reagan should go, when he should meet Catholics, when he should meet Hispanics, and it's a long article on the details of programming every gesture that the president makes at every airport. What he doesn't tell you about, you have to read other places. A listener to this broadcast up in Oregon sent me one of the most shocking articles I've seen in a long time. It's from the Vancouver, Washington paper, The Columbian, May 25th. It said when Ronald Reagan was in China, I mean, you have him with the chopsticks and the China wall. When he was in China, he was recently making a decision, it said, to agree with China that if they have nuclear technology, they could store China's nuclear waste in the United States. Up in Hanford, Washington, is to be the world's end waste site. The law calls for creating, they have a law creating a permanent waste storage site. And there's several sections that have been selected. And the U.S. News and World Report had an article about decisions on putting nuclear waste where they could put it and how they will get rid of it for 3.5 decades. For 35 years, the United States has spent $4 billion storing this material. And they're going to spread it in Mississippi or Nevada. And the map shows Hanford Reservation up in Washington. Think of the rivers and the seepage and the fish and the salmon. And U.S. News was talking about different states saying not here. But Reagan had a very successful trip in China. China isn't big enough, you understand? So why is it so successful? He says you put in nuclear weapons or nuclear power and send your waste to us. They'll have to change this script under the Statue of Liberty. She's being remodeled. So they'll have to say, send us your tired, cancerous, birth defect-causing nuclear waste. Mr. Ruckelshaus, William Ruckelshaus, the Environmental Protection Agency administrator, said last week, the Democrats exploit the toxic waste issue. He's wrong. The Democrats are asleep. They've already been poisoned. There's no more for them to say. I don't hear them saying anything. A man goes to China. Now, while he's in China, there was a story in the Washington Post, May 2nd, 1984, out of Taiwan, Richard Allen, the national security advisor, at the same time that Ronald Reagan is promising China these goodies, is speaking to a group on Taiwan relations, and this is what he's saying. He said the simple fact of the matter is that mainland China is not, cannot, and will not be an ally of the United States. Neither are we in a loose alliance with the communist regime there. This is Richard Allen, a senior counselor for foreign policy, national security, Republican National Committee, who was kicked out as national security advisor with his finger in the financial till. He's telling them over there, don't worry, they're not an ally of the United States. If they're not an ally, or even if they are, why send their nuclear dump to any one of our 50 states? Are our states going to become the nuclear repository? Yes, they have been. He's promising it. How does he get everything he wants and comes home so happy? He gives them everything they want. Another story about his Chinese trip, L.A. Herald. Reynolds Tobacco into China market. The R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company has now gained access to the world's largest tobacco market in agreement with the Chinese government under $20 million contract. The tobacco will be produced at a Chinese factory Estimated 250 million smokers in China will use it, and this was opened up. They will be the first U.S. company to penetrate China's barrier against foreign firms selling jointly made products in the domestic market. Now, in a story about Robert Keith Gray, who I referred to many times on the air, it was the L.A. Times, the May 13th article on Robert Keith Gray. Among his clients are the American Tobacco Company, American Express, don't leave home without it, and the American Tobacco Company, as well as NBC, that's the Marvin Kalb connections, Haiti, Turkey. But Mr. Gray, Keith Gray, who runs Ronald Reagan's inauguration, who's close to Mr. Casey and Paul Exalt and the powers that be in Washington, sells those poor Chinese 250 million tobacco. That's another deal he made, nuclear waste and tobacco. May 24th, a week later, Surgeon General links smokers to lung disease. A lot of strong articles. We've known it for years, but a strong story a few weeks, 1 week later on lung disease. Forget it, China. First, the British gave you opium. We'll give you tobacco. That's the Ronald Reagan trip to China. The nuclear waste deposits over here, the tobacco for the Chinese and Mr. Gray's clients. It is horrendous what he gets away with, and he does it well. Now, I want to update a few deaths and murders because there's so many that if I did 1 hour a week on just the deaths, we would be busy every weekend. So I don't want them to pile up too hard. And there's some serious questions about some of these murders, and I want to share them with you. First of all, there is the new book out, In God's Name, an investigation into the murder of Pope John Paul I. I just got it this afternoon. Someone called me and got a hold of it. It is available in the stores. I looked up the part of Licio Gelli. It describes him working with the CIA, being at Reagan's inauguration. It tells about the murders in the Vatican and the role of Paul Marcinkus. And it describes six men who had something to lose if they didn't kill John Paul I. One was Cardinal Jean Viollot, V-I-L-L-O-T, the Vatican secretary. He was murdered just a short while ago. It goes into his murder. The other was Roberta Calvi, and he was murdered in London. Licio Gelli, who fled the country and is in Argentina and South America. Michael Sindona, who's wanted for murder charges of his investigator of his banks and for breaking the Franklin National Bank in New York. Cardinal John Cody in Chicago, who I said was tied into the Continental Illinois Bank, and he died of a quick heart attack just when his name came into the service, one of those apparent heart attacks, and Paul Marcinkus. These are the people involved in killing Pope John Paul I, Marcinkus, and he uses words. I love this author. He talks like Mae Brussel. He says Marcinkus is hiding in the Vatican and can't come out. He describes $100,000 that this pope, John Paul II, gave to Solidarity. He describes Cicero, Illinois, and the Al Capone gang and how Marcinkus was raised in the Al Capone territory. And the very exact time that Capone died in 1947 is when Marcinkus, the head of the Vatican Bank, left for Rome. And he describes Cardinal Spellman handpicking Paul Marcinkus for his role. The book is really fantastic. I only had about an hour to look at it before I came to the station, and my mind was blown. I was looking up at the index, certain things, and what I like about it is most subjects of books that come out have everything but the things I talk to you about on the air, and this guy's from Great Britain. He's done 3 years' work in other books, and he's talking about the Al Capone gang, the mafia, and about, as I ran through it, I fingered about 20 murders right there. So you can get this book. It's by David Yallop, Y-A-L-L-O-P. Bantam published it, and would you know, it's the choice for an alternate of the Book of the Month Club. My goodness, what's happening in America? I think these are the Rockefeller Protestants getting back at the Vaticans. I wouldn't be surprised, and there is a heavy war. I'll go into more of that later. Now, the New York Times has a full page, two full pages on the shooting of the Pope and Aja. I can't detail it for you. It just came out yesterday, Sunday Times, and I usually outline these things, but if you go to the libraries, you can copy it. It lists the cast of characters involved in trying to kill the Pope, and it goes into Mr. Bagi, B-A-G-C-I, who is a member of the Grey Wolves. That's the Nazi organization that we referred to, where Aja stored his rifle, to Mr. Katil, C-A-T-L-I, the Turk, a Grey Wolf leader, another Nazi leader, Mr. Salebi, a gray wolf leader. These are the Nazis out of Frankfurt, Germany. Mr. Selig, a gray wolf leader and the Nazis. There's as many Nazis as they are Bulgarians. And remember, Otto von Bolschwing had property in Bulgaria and set up Reinhard Gehlen's agents inside of Bulgaria. It describes Mr. Tintner, the arms dealer in Vienna, who provided the weapon for Aja. So what you're going to get is a story of as many Nazis as they aren't leftists. They wanted to get rid of the Pope. But if you take all the murders of John Paul I and the scandals coming down, there was more reason for the right wing and Licio Gelli and those people to get rid of John Paul II after John Paul I was murdered, because they had to cover their past. Look at 4 out of the 6 are dead now. And why not try with Frank Turpel and the CIA, not only to get rid of the Pope, who's a witness to Marcinkus and the banking problems, to blame it on the Russians at the same time. That's what happened with Larry McDonald. And Widow McDonald is finally catching on. And I may call her about the role of the LAPD and call down to Atlanta, Georgia, and see if she's aware. She isn't naming the Russians at all. She's naming the people who knew and sent her husband to the deathbed. And there's as much reason to get rid of John Paul II at that time in history, for sure, as there was for anybody to worry about Solidarity. Now, I'm going to run down. I've got 12 minutes, and I went around a few deaths quickly and share them with you because they are of a concern to all of us, I'm sure. Remember last week or 2 weeks ago, I talked about the head investigator for the Sinn Féin organization who was found in a river in Washington, D.C. in the Potomac. He was drowned, and this is another investigator for a House investigation that happened a while ago. But it's a current and always an ongoing investigation. Robert Boetcher, Boetcher, staff chief in House Inquiry. He died in a fall, 44 years old, fell off the roof of an apartment in New York City. This is New York Times, May 30th, 1984. Boetcher was the staff director of the Congressional Investigations of the South Korean Influence Peddling in Washington. He died Thursday in the fall from a roof from a building in Central Park. From 1971 to 79, he directed the staff of the House Subcommittee on International Organizations, and in that capacity, he was in charge under Representative Donald Frazier of gathering information of a scandal in which Tongson Park, the South Korean millionaire and businessman, were accused of seeking influence of American political figures. He's currently head of the public relations for the Dance Theater of Harlem. Now, Reverend Moon is supposed to go to jail. There's a lot of information on Moon and the Moonies and Tongson Park linked. The name's Fenn Kramer, various characters we've talked about. I have those hearings that a subscriber to this program sent me on the Korea Gate hearings. Moon is not out of the news. He's a very important person, and that information has been suppressed by the late Leon Jaworski. Another staff investigator falls off a roof, age 44. Thomas S. Pillsbury died in Rapids during a recent trip over the Colorado River, 66 years old. He was a former professor of chemistry at Dominican College. He worked on the Manhattan Project, which produced the first atomic bomb. He's become violent against the atomic bomb, opposed it. He reversed his decision on it, and he's worked for the nuclear arms race to reverse the present government policy on the arms race. He was planning a trip to the Soviet Union to discuss nuclear proliferation with a trade unionist there, and he was going down the Colorado River. The boat went over the rapids. Before he could get to Russia or be against the nuclear movement, he was dead. His home is in San Francisco, but before the body got to San Francisco, they cremated it in Flagstaff, Arizona, which by air flight is 30 minutes, okay? Abe Spitzer, crewman on the A-bomb, one made the bomb and one dropped the bomb. Abe Spitzer, crewman on the A-bomb from White Plains, New York, 72 years old. He wrote a book about the bomb. We dropped the A-bomb. It was the title of his book. He published it, his account of the bomb in 1946. He was against the bomb. He was a peace-loving person. He was horrified by what he did. He was killed in an automobile accident a few minutes from home. His brother said he was killed 2 minutes from his home after he'd survived two of the most dangerous missions in the world. One man made the bomb, one man hated the bomb, and this fellow was killed just outside of his home, a car accident, and he was buried last Sunday. A general's body was found in the Potomac. The Potomac must be pretty crowded, I should think. Brigadier General William Charles Hall. This is from the Washington Times in a small article in the San Francisco Chronicle. The body of retired Army Brigadier General William Charles Hall, missing from his Washington home for 6 days, was found in the Potomac River. He appeared to have drowned. Hall, 75, was a member of General George Patton's World War II staff, so he would know Fritz Kramer, because the book on Patton, written by Farrago, says that General Fritz Kramer was with Mr. Patton. He would know Fritz Kramer in Washington if Congressman Rodino's committee ever came to the push and shove. They said, we don't know how or when he died. There were no signs of foul play. He went for a walk and was found in the Potomac floating around. A Mexican journalist was shot, a violent opponent, I use the word violent because very strong against the CIA. He published a book against the CIA. A progressive writer similar to Jack Anderson described prominent Mexican journalist shot dead. Manuel Buenda, one of Mexico's best known and most read journalists, he wrote a column called Private Network. He published a book against the Central Intelligence Agency. He blamed the CIA, it was called the CIA in Mexico, where he detailed CIA activity in Mexico and included the names of CIA operatives. He called us a sick society, and he wrote a column. He accused John Gavin, our ambassador, of spending his time outside of Mexico. Incidentally, John Gavin worked in Young Americans for Freedom and with Ed Butler before he became an actor and got active in politics and became the ambassador to Mexico. When you get on Gavin's shoes in the CIA, they didn't play around, no Potomac River or anything, just gunned down the leading columnist. Now, one of the saddest stories, I have to make a confession. This woman was killed. They said it was a suicide. It wasn't a suicide. As a matter of fact, when I share the information, I'll go into the coroner of Houston, Texas. Another story about him this week, a big story. There were so many. This columnist, Leonida McLean, M-C-C-L-A-I-N, they said she commits suicide, and many of these suicides you find later, there was a bottle next to her bed. She's described as the most brilliant black member of the newspaper editorial board of the Chicago Tribune, one of the few in the country, described as a brilliant woman, recently written up as one of America's 10 most outstanding women in the March issue of Glamour magazine. She wrote an article to the Washington Post last July on the elections in Chicago and about the psychotic events surrounding Harold Washington, the black man. And she wrote a book on why she hates whites, that she grew up as a black woman never to hate anybody. But the article was in the Washington Post, and she said that it hurts her so bad to see what's happening in Chicago, the racism and the shenanigans that are going on there, and how much hatred there is. It really broke her heart to see the way the whites were fighting, as if how do you work your way up in the system. And this woman died. The newspaper, of course, says suicide ends life of columnist. And then you read on how successful she is. She's one of the few people that ever worked her way up to be. She's the first black member of the Chicago Tribune's editorial board, received journalism awards. Now, she died, it was reported, May 31st. And 1 week before she died was all this controversy about Harold Washington, that he had to resign, that he didn't turn in certain papers on time, his financial disclosures, and they came with the court order. They said, we have to get rid of Harold Washington. After she helped him get elected and was close to him, they were trying to kick him out of government. A few financial papers he didn't sign. Think of the difference between Edwin Meese, who wants to be the attorney general, who's asked for an extension of a half a year to revise his financial statements that didn't disclose loans, didn't disclose income or gifts or travels. And they wanted to get this black mayor out of Chicago, and she was very close to him. Now, several weeks ago, I talked about the most successful, prominent, rich man in Washington, D.C., who was killed in a plane crash with his son, and prominent, wealthy, recognized, and close to Jesse Jackson. Now, this woman is close to Harold Washington, and she expressed the racism that the Soviet Union and other countries aren't supposed to know exists. And I felt very badly, and there's an article in the Washington Post that I have to tell you, I think it's the only newspaper article that I've read with all the murders and deaths that made me cry. I Don't know why, maybe because it was so well written and maybe because of the implications it had about her death. It's written by Ronald D. White, and he wrote, "I wish I had known who she was, the loss of Leonida McLean." And he says how she came to Washington, D.C., and her stories were printed in the Washington Post, and they wanted her, but that she had this job at the Chicago Tribune, her own column there, and that this particular Ronald White was supposed to check articles to see if there was racism in the paper, discrimination against Jesse Jackson. And she was telling about her work, and he said he saw her across the room, and he met her, and he liked her. And he says, "I wish I had taken her to coffee. I wish I had taken her to dinner. I wish I had talked to her. She's 32-year-old, a black woman in the vanguard of breaking stereotypes and racial barriers and doing it with writing, as against, say, Malcolm X, who's saying, 'You better get your gun,' and doing it with writing, something quite like fire as an inferno in purgatory." And he said, "Now she is dead," and he says, "by her own hands." Well, when you think of the journalists in Mexico and the various journalists being blown up, down in Costa Rica, the two journalists that were killed, Mr. Pastora came out this week. He survived the bombing, Eden Pastora, and he said the CIA was behind the bombing attack, and American journalists were killed there. And we haven't played that up at all. Do you notice how that was passed over? He was the anti-Sandinista leader who said he didn't want to work with the rebel group. The American was funny because we're funding the army of Somoza, and he wants, if there's going to be a change, to get the Somoza people out. And they tried to kill him, and there were 20 journalists under medical care today. 20 of them, do you see very much about this in the news service? Hardly a word, that were injured. Some were killed, a British-born correspondent for Newsweek magazine, and some of them were killed down there. And 20 are in hospitals. And Pastora survived and said the CIA did it. If the CIA did it in Mexico, if the CIA did it in Costa Rica, why couldn't they get her out? They can't stand black, brilliant people like that. Candy Jones said that when she was inducted into the Central Intelligence Agency, they taught her to hate blacks and to hate Jews and the Italian smell and the characteristics of these people because they were training them to hate them. And here was a woman working her way in the system. It almost makes you believe that there has to be a bloody revolution. Every leader who speaks up is dead. Whether it's Frank Church from cancer, or Adlai Stevenson poison, Medgar Evers, who wasn't violent, killed, Malcolm X, Hubert Humphrey of cancer. Where are the voices of opposition? These new young people in their 20s and 30s, or the prominent black person, the family in Chicago, in Washington, D.C., who may get a shake with somebody like Jesse Jackson making waves, a black writer with the Chicago Tribune working her way to a place where blacks have never been. And they find a bottle of pills on the table. No indications or reasons why she would do herself in. Very prosperous, very prominent, recognized around the world. Her friend was to be recalled, or they're putting pressure on him. And then a week later, she's dead. We better watch America. You better watch it. And each week, I'll do 6 or 8 murders because I have a pile of them, and I don't want them to accumulate too much. And maybe if you collect these broadcasts or tapes, you'll get the picture if you didn't get it already. This is Mae Brussel. This is KAZU-FM, Pacific Grove, California.